Good morning and welcome into the Rebel Room. I am Taylor Byrne alongside Ray Brewer as we settle in here on January 19th, five games into the Mountain West slate as UNLV basketball is off to a start that is going to make several people. I have a coffee with me. Ray, I believe, has already gone through his coffee. As the song today suggests, maybe you want to grab a beer right now with the way that the team is performing. Losers of 5 of 6, 4 of 5. Well, I guess four or five in the conference. The lone victory shouldn't even really count as a conference win with San Jose State, but they are in the Mountain West for the time being. Ray, last week when we were in this little room in the corner here of our newsroom, you were talking about a 2-0 week, talking about a conference title, talking about a lot of things.
Well, now
how are you feeling 7 days later?
Well, I was wrong. The conference title likely won't happen.
Get rid of that likely.
Yeah. UNLV had leads in both games. They were arguably a Pat McCom missed free throw away against Boise.
Yep, and so he had, I mean, complete. So we turned back the clock here a little bit, going back to the Tuesday game at Boise. Complete no show in the first half, pathetic. But then they were in it. They had a chance. Second half played better. Boise State is not by any means a world beater. Anthony Drimmick, their best player, has been out and will be out for the rest of the season. And they're not. Look, you should be able to run on those guys. There's a lot of things you should be able to do against them. UNLV botched the end of regulation. McCaw, who had a very nice game, missed a free throw that would have made it a 3-point game. Marks comes down and ties, and then what does UNLV do on its final possession? Instead of driving, Rashad Vaughn just stands outside and chucks a deep three, and then they just completely collapsed in overtime. I mean, that's the result that they deserved out of that game. That said, had a chance, right there, and then Saturday at San Diego State, I mean, led. I don't know what the exact figure is. It felt like they led for at least 30 minutes.
Yeah, led for a good bit of the game. Hit shots, played decent D, I thought. Executed to a certain extent, I thought, but just couldn't finish the deal, which I guess everybody now says is a common theme with this year's team.
Well, I mean, if you look at it was – I don't know if surprise is the right word, but the way that they started the year with two single-possession victories against Morehead State and Sam Houston State, last year, anything single-possession, anything end-of-game execution, they were losing those games. And so it seemed like, sort of turning the corner a little bit, and then they have that Portland game going to overtime. Doolin gets them to overtime with that dump-off pass to Morgan and then takes over there. And so they seemed like a team that end-of-game was certainly better than we had seen out of UNLV in the past year or two. But at the same time, those things tend to even out. And so you could say that, they were – even though the Wyoming game ended up being 5 points, that was basically a one-possession game at the end. So there's that game. There is the Boise game.
The Reno game.
And the Reno game. So you could say, they're 10-8 now. They could be 13-5. Well, they also could be 7-11,
exactly.
Because of those early ones. And so those things tend to even out. If you keep playing yourself into those situations, you're only going to be able to come out on the right side so many times.
Are they getting tired? I mean, you're courtside every game.
They were definitely tired, San Diego State.
Okay, but the other games was just a combination of a few things where they didn't get that equaled them not getting the job.
I mean, part of it, I don't think you can rule out fatigue in general, and I don't mean that as an excuse. I mean that as a criticism of the rotation and the fact that the starters just play so much that they're going to wear down. I mean that's the way it is. Chris Wood, I mean, great. Okay, this is a bad example because he played played 42 minutes at Boise State. Well, he was conserving a bunch of energy, but against San Diego State, a team that runs full court press, all five starters played at least 32 minutes. McCaw and Vaughn played 37. So, yeah, I wouldn't expect those guys to have legs at the end of that. Going against a similarly athletic team that's pressuring you the entire time. And just period, freshmen playing close to a full game. I don't expect that to work out a lot of times.
Did you hear my take on Chris Wood?
Let's hear it. Everybody's got one.
Okay, so obviously Chris Wood is in everybody's eye because he's billed as having great potential, but it doesn't appear like he's putting the energy.
He's not even billed, is it? He has great potential.
Okay, but he's clearly doesn't have that half a life is showing up with a good attitude, right? So for me, Chris Wood has always been, he's not an alpha dog. He's always been the sidekick, the second guy, a guy that came off the bench. As a junior at Finley, limited minutes, came off the bench. As a senior at Finley, was a sidekick. You know, last year at UNLV, came off the bench, was a sidekick. Now he's the best player on the team. Everything has to go through him. People are looking at him to make key contributions. It's just not in his personality. And the worst part is now that we're looking at him to do it, we notice that he's lethargic in everything he does.
And has been that way. Like that's, but that's
he's not going to change.
Part of it, yeah, say exactly. That's always been a criticism of him. And I said this during one of my radio spots last week at ESPN. You know, Todd Simon, you know, his former coach at Finley and now an assistant at UNLV, has for a long time given me the spiel about, you know, it just looks like Chris isn't running hard. You know, I mean, with his gait and all this stuff, he's really trying.
If that's as fast as he can.
And I was always just like, okay, Todd, okay.
You're 6'9". He's about the same size.
Yeah, I'm 6'8". And when we've talked post-game, you know, like both standing up, other people have commented, like, he does not look taller than you.
It's just he runs like he's 7'9".
Yeah. I mean, it's always, like I said, it's always kind of been an issue for him. But UNLV's problems go deeper than that. And part of it is what I just alluded to. There's just no depth. And that's, you know, part of that is just the roster that they put together. You know, so you bring in transfers who you know are going to have to sit. Or in, you know, Jerome Seguier's case, I thought he would have had to sit no matter what. But they didn't even try to get him eligible, even though, you know, Dave and the coaching staff had always been adamant. If they tried, they thought they would have been able to get him. Now, an extra guard, you know, does that help a ton right now? You know, that's debatable because you're missing the interior is the bigger problem. But it's another body. Kendall Smith, you had him and he transferred, so that was another body. Cook was out of your hands, but he was probably going to redshirt anyway. You honor a scholarship for Dantley Walker and then don't play him. And so then you've got your three guys on the bench. And I guess I'll include McCaw in that for now, even though he should be now permanently in the starting lineup. They finally moved him up there at San Diego State, and he responded with a career-high 17, plus a ton of other stuff.
You like him.
Oh, I like him a lot.
I could tell in your voice.
He's what's not to like? He's like the best thing going for UNLV and has been for months. You know, Vaughn can score. I actually think I underappreciate –
because you expect him to be
his offensive game because just his ability to drive and finish.
Mm-hmm.
And I still feel like, I mean, I wouldn't have a problem if he took more shots.
He kind of needs to take over. When he got hot there against San Diego State in the first half.
Second half.
Oh,
He did like nothing to start, in the first
half. There was
half.
At one point. Oh, it was. I got home late. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Second half.
Yep.
I was like, wow, this is the guy.
And that was the weird thing. Winston Shepard, another Finley guy, was on him like the entire time the first half.
Uh-huh.
And Rashad did like nothing. Then second half, for the first like 10 to 12 minutes, Winston only played 4 minutes. And I wasn't sure why. But that coincided with Rashad going off. And when he gets going, then after that, it doesn't matter as much if you've got like a good guy guarding him once you kind of get in the rhythm and that sort of thing. But McCall was the guy at the beginning. Who really led him for everything. He had a hand in, like, their first 12 or 14 points, something like that.
Hit a few corner threes.
He had a couple corner threes, a nice drive to get their first bucket of the game, a couple nice dishes off to Good Luck Okonobo, who was also wearing a headband, not coincidentally, one of his better games.
My dad, who is a diehard Rebel fan, anti-Dave Rice, very hilarious, 70 years old, he has a lot of theories that you just, like, totally shake your head at in life, but the one thing about UNLV that's kind of crazy, but it makes sense, he says that the Rebels, Dave Rice makes them think too much, and that You just got to let them play. That sometimes when they bring the ball up the
court, I'm going to hard disagree on that one.
They look over to coach to see what to do. So instead of running, they're getting there, they're stopping, and then they're trying to work a set. And every time somebody looks over to the bench, my dad goes absolutely berserk.
Because no one ever looks over at the bench.
Yeah, don't let them think. Don't let them think. They're young players, right? They're going to get confused.
Because
just let them play.
My immediate counter, half joking, half not, would be it doesn't really look like they're thinking most of the time on offense. It looks like they're standing, which I guess is maybe what your dad's trying to get to. But that's – look, there's a lot of things you can criticize, and obviously Dave is getting a heap of it right now. The team's 10-8. Like I said, lost 5 of 6 in a row. But back to the rotation, they just don't have one, really. I mean, Jalon Kendrick has been like a complete no-show this year for all intents and purposes. Cornish has moments.
Speaking of lethargic.
But you know, I don't know if you can play more than 10 to 12 minutes a game and get production out of him. And Dwayne Morgan, you know, had some flashes here the past few games, but it is not there, especially defensively. I think you can live with what he's doing on offense because he's making good, aggressive moves and just not finishing. That's kind of the main thing going on for him there. But defensively, he's giving up put-back dunks, just not putting a body on people. He's just getting bullied by bigger, stronger guys, which to a degree, you know, I remember Nance just did whatever he wanted against him. Well, Nance is going to do that. Angelo Chole just backed him down and did whatever too. And that's, you know, again, like a senior, or I can't remember if Chole's junior or senior transfer from Arizona, you know, bigger, faster, stronger type of thing. But
older, bodies developed.
Yeah. But that still means if you can't get production out of him, then how do you play him? And so part of that, I think, is just, you know, I've never been a big fan of the way Dave runs his rotations, especially early in the year. I think that's too short of a bench, and that's how you end up in conference play, not having guys develop to the point that you need them. And I think for, you know, once again, that's what UNLV is dealing with. I don't know if right now you can play Cornish, Kendrick, Morgan a lot of minutes, but you have to at some point because your starters can't play that many minutes and expect them to be productive.
There's clearly four guys that Rice trusts to play. McCaw.
Vaughn. Doolin.
Put that on the side.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Yeah. And Chris. For some reason.
Doolin, what happened at the end of the Boise game? He didn't play to start overtime?
Well, he played to start overtime. He didn't play a bunch in the second half.
Because he had foul trouble.
Yeah, foul trouble, and also he just wasn't all that effective. They found that was just finding a lineup that worked. And Cody Doolin scored their first 12 points.
Yeah, I saw that part.
Yeah.
But
and then he came unraveled at the end. Like, there's no defending what he did in overtime. Just a couple of back-to-back turnovers out of your senior point guard against a pressure that's not really all that. I thought he was at
– Has he underwhelmed?
No.
I think
what is it with you and everyone else of all the things this we got a lot of texts and calls about this on the radio station last week too. Why are people picking apart Cody Doolin right now? Of all the
because he doesn't score. How did he average 19 points a game at San Francisco?
Because they needed him to more.
I don't see how that happened.
Well, also, was that what his actual average was?
I thought it was.
That feels really high.
It sounds really high.
Look that up while I go on this. Because of all the things that they have issues with, of just being able to run competent sets consistently on offense, of getting consistent effort and just showing up to games from certain players, of all their execution, energy, all their problems, Cody Doolin is not the problem. Cody Doolin is a limited player. Athletic, he cannot guard almost, you know, the top half guards in this league, he can't guard him one-on-one.
He had 2 points, 2 rebounds, and 3 assists against San Diego State.
Yeah. It's because McCall was running the show a lot. And he wasn't – I mean, but is Cody Doolin the reason they didn't win there? No.
I'm just saying.
How'd Chris Wood do there?
I'm not a Chris Wood guy. I never have said that Chris Wood's my guy. I think he's
How Jordan Cornish do there? How Jalon Kendrick, a starter all year, do there?
Nobody has been good. Who's been the Rebels' best player this year?
Pat McCall.
Who's been their second best player?
Rashad Vaughn, probably.
Good luck. Good luck is
no.
Overachieved.
That's wrong.
He's
good
he,
luck.
He alters every shot. I don't want to get too loud.
As much as we kind of keep hitting Chris Wood for all this stuff, Chris has been their second or third best player. And that says something about the team overall. I mean, but Wood can just get production whether he looks like he's bought in or not. Like, he's had, quote, a good season. It's just the attitude, the moodiness, and, that type of stuff. What's the average?
12 points a game and 5 assists.
Yeah, that's a lot different.
Believe it or not, he actually scored 33 points against Reno when he was at San Francisco.
Could have used
2 points. Listen, when you lose...
Am I crazy that I think it's crazy that people keep pointing at Doolin as a reason for this? Like, I mean, everything is a contributing factor, but I think everybody saw
Caucasian, past first point guard, senior transfer with a college degree, and they automatically thought Kevin Kruger.
Yeah.
And Kruger, of course, led UNLV to the Sweet 16. They won the Mountain West. It was one of the more awesome times of UNLV
basketball. They won the league tournament.
They won the league tournament, yeah.
How'd they do regular season?
I think that BYU was awesome, and Utah was in the league. They probably took third that year.
Okay.
But I think they said, okay, well, Cody Doolin's going to be the next Kevin Kruger. And now UNLV's 10-8. And Cody Doolin scored 3 points with 2 assists against San Diego State in a big rivalry game. So it opens the window for just everybody, not people as intimate with the program as you are, to be like, we thought Cody Doolin would be like 11-5, 11-4, 6 assists a game, change the pace of the game, get these young guys in the right spot.
Yeah.
And Pat McCaw's had a better time of doing that.
He had 3 points and 2 assists because the backup point guard who got his first career start took over, played a career high minutes, scored a career high points, and was great. And so the ball was not in his hands nearly as much. That's your answer. Cody Doolin is not the problem. This is nuts.
Who plays point guard next year? Seager or McCaw?
They say Seager's, but I think it's Pat.
Because you sign a point guard too?
Huh? Poyser?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's the interesting thing. Because McCaw, and I don't want to go too much on this for next year because there is – I don't want to pretend like there's not a couple of home games this week and a bunch of season left. But because you can put McCaw in a lot of different places, then that maybe affects what you think. Because Seagares could be a one or a two maybe. I like him a lot just based on practice, but – I really need to see kind of how he was as a player at Rutgers and get more into that. And then Poyser, who's a athletic guy coming out of – I think he's CIA bounce as well, coming out of Canada, played at Finley Prep for a year a couple seasons ago. And then you have Daquan Cook kind of back as one of your backups there. And so that actually seems like a possible deep position. So maybe you have Pat be the three or two, things like that.
UNLV is desperately missing this year is Ben Carter.
No, who they're desperately missing this year is Kem Birch.
Well, even better. Or Roscoe Smith.
No, Kem Birch.
Kem Birch, okay.
Like, because that, I mean, Roscoe was gone. Like,
sure, but he could have stayed.
Roscoe was gone the day after the season. Kem Birch went basically up until the deadline because it was a real decision,
mm-hmm.
and it was something that could have gone either way, and the UNLV coaches really wish he would have stayed. I mean, how different is this team with that? And again, I don't want to play too much of the what-if game.
Sure.
Because guess what? This coaching staff ran guys out and decided themselves to, quote, hit the reset button and do it with freshmen and all that. And so they gave themselves this rotation.
They're sleeping
this
in the
lineup.
Bed they built.
Exactly.
Yes!
Was it an IKEA bed?
We don't
have IKEAs here yet. Because otherwise, I don't know how to build a bed.
You'd be the only one.
I wrote it at the time that the ceiling for what this season could be was lowered when Kem Birch decided to leave. I, however, did not see 10-8, 1-4 in league. Because even, I felt after like New York while they were going to get better and just kind of early December, it's like this is an average to, an okay team, which in this league should be fine. It's not going to be probably what everybody wants or what seemed capable at a certain time, but they should be all right. That does not explain losing to Reno. That does not explain no showing at Boise.
That's the thing that was perplexing for me is the no-show at Boise.
I've seen that so many times.
We identified that the Reno game was partially a lack of effort and that they overlooked the opponent, yes. Right? So how do you go in your next significant game, a game that's kind of being billed as a must-win against a team you're going to be jockeying with, and you just totally, like the first half, forget that a game's going on?
Pathetic.
Right?
It was embarrassing.
And
because it happens all the time.
Whose fault is that?
Colorado coaching staff. It has to be.
But don't they know what we know? How hard is it to have energy? How hard is it to show up? That's the easiest part of life, is just getting there.
I would like to say that it's just the players, because to me, this is kind of how I've always been with this particular regard, like just showing up to a game, caring about a game. I think that's personal responsibility. But the fact that I saw this last year at Colorado State, I've seen it 2 years ago or last year at Air Force, years started to blend together, at Fresno State, Fresno at home,
that Fresno
Reno
home game.
Like, this has happened year after year. And so that's where it has to be on the coaches more than on the players. But it's not like they were saying, Boise State, who cares? You guys, can overlook them. I just think they have not figured out a way to make their teams year after year with the different lineups to make their teams respect and actually give everything that they have and give everything they should to these opponents.
They need a master motivator. They need somebody to go in there and be like a hype guy. They need like the version of me in the office. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's a lot that they
need a hype guy. They got two games this week, New Mexico Wednesday, Utah State Saturday. They'll be favored in both games.
Small on Saturday especially, I think.
They'll be a small favorite in both games, according to our Mountain West insider, Taylor Brown.
Hey, you're the one who thought Boise State should have been a pick. Now, granted, they could have won that game.
Of the plays of the day, I've lost.
And the plus 5.5 sure should have won.
Yeah, but it did not. Needless to say, the Rebels give us plenty to talk about, both good and bad.
And what are you kind of expecting coming this week? My disappointment with kind of the talking points after the San Diego State game was how everyone talked about how happy they were that they played with energy and showed up.
Well, for them, that's a huge victory. That's where this program has digressed to.
No, because Nicholas would get up. Your 3-year old son,
four year old son.
I forgot how old Evelyn was. Your 4-year old son would get up for San Diego State.
I know.
That game that does not show anything, getting up for that game in that environment. And it wasn't even that great of an environment at Viejas compared to the past couple of years. But that doesn't require anything. That's a rivalry. That's something you can feel.
Anytime you put on the jersey and cross the white lines, you have to be ready to play. Because it's 4 years. When it's over, it's over. Then you're stuck like you and me playing at Henderson Multigen against the Foothill JV team, and you know what I'm saying?
And getting run.
Eventually, you got to figure it out, right?
Yeah, you would think so. But so I guess just, I mean, I was annoyed with that, especially coming from Dave, who on Thursday was talking about how he was annoyed with essentially people kind of patting UNLV on the back and being happy with the team after two straight losses, talking about the Wyoming and Kansas games. And so to go from that to basically talking about happy with how they showed up for the San Diego State game in a 6-point loss confused me. But at the same time, back home, winnable games.
School's back in session.
New Mexico is not what they were. But I think it's still easy to hate Craig Neal for opposing fans. And I don't know if Cullen travels anymore since Cullen Neal, who's the coach's son, sophomore point guard, out for the year. But he's very hateable.
He's easy
in the league.
To not like, yeah.
Yeah. But it's kind of, two games here, both at home. What are you expecting as far as, A, just showing up for the game from the Rebels' perspective, and then, you know, performance. What are you thinking that they're going to get out of this week?
I really think this is a week where we learn how the players view the rest of the season. If they come out inspired and win both games, we know that this is a team that's going to go down fighting and give us their best in the league tournament, which is the only way to get in the tournament. If they come out flat and lose to New Mexico, which is very possible, it's still New Mexico, even though they're not as talented, then we know that it's a team simply going through the motions. We'll talk about firing Rice if we're the fans for the next 2 months, and then we'll reshuffle in some more three-star recruits and see if we could do it again next year. I think, for me, this week is going to be telling. Does this group give it their all, try to get to a respectable 18 or 19 wins? I mean, whatever. Try to win more than lose before the rest of the year, and put themselves in position where they can make a run in the league tournament? Or do they say, you know what, we're just going to play for me and go through the motions?
So, what do you – out of those two, what do you expect?
I don't know. I would think that they would say, because we've seen them play good at Wyoming or Kansas with energy, I would say that they're going to put their best foot forward.
You're
not as confident.
Well, I think Wednesday they win for sure. Saturday I'm not.
You love Utah State.
Not really. I picked them like 8th or something.
Yeah, but you're on this whole sentimental thing. The coach is retiring.
Well, also,
are you going to get the guy a rocking chair?
That they play hard and are better significantly than they were last year. And guess what? That's the type of team that I think UNLV could very easily overlook, especially if they have a good performance at home Wednesday against New Mexico, because they do seem to just turn it quick. Like, they no-showed at Boise State after beating San Jose State. Who cares that you beat San Jose State? Anybody can do that. Like, that does I feel like that, all of a sudden, they were just like, oh, we figured it out. We're back to, mm-hmm. you know, having some swag or whatever. We'll just roll past these Broncos.
Mm-hmm. Back in the day, UNLV knew that it hosted the league tournament, so they would kind of just go through the motions until March and take their best shot at winning the thing to go into the NCAAs. I don't know if this group is smart enough to figure that out or to have that mentality.
What do you mean smart enough? That's never a good idea.
I mean, it's...
What do you mean, man?
It's what you got now. You're stuck with your...
Well, yeah, but if you're going to actually win the conference tournament, you should be trying to play your best basketball by then. And you're also... The teams that you're going to play in that conference tournament, guess what? You're playing them between now and then.
And that's the best part about 10-8, is that UNLV hasn't peaked yet.
10-8? What?
What's their record?
Oh, 10-8 overall. Sorry, I thought you were projecting their conference record. Because there's 18 games.
No. That's the best part about being, you know, in mid-January.
About having lost 5 of 6 is that.
Yeah, and being nearly at 500.
It can't get much worse.
You haven't peaked yet. Basketball's all about getting hot when it matters.
Yeah, and there's...
Could you see Dave Rice cutting down the net and twirling it around in his right hand?
No, I could not.
Do you think he would be a twirler? Do you think he would be a Steve Alford?
There is zero chance he would ever wear the net around his neck. Because we've had that conversation, and I would really love to see it at some point, just because it makes no sense for his personality, which is the main reason I want it. I think Chris Wood or Good Luck would be the most likely wearing the net to the post game. But we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves talking about
a tournament two months from now
that they're I'll say it right now, that they're unlikely to win.
If it was you would cut that net in half, and you'd let Patty McCaw wear half of it and Cody Doolin wear the other half.
No, I'd just give it all to Pat.
Okay.
I don't have to ride I feel like I shouldn't have to ride for Cody Doolin. That's one of the most baffling things to me. I get, you know, they're bad right now, and so people are just picking everything apart.
They might not be good ever this year.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate.
And if you talk to the 96 people that commented after the Boise game, they may never be good with the coach they have.
Yeah,
according to our comment.
Well, there are a lot of people who not only feel that way, but have felt that way. Right. I mean, that's not new. It's just it comes out a lot more when you have stretches like this and where it's easy to just point at the losses, things like that. But you know, the only counter I'll give, because I'm not gonna like I don't need to defend Dave Rice, or you go, this, you after Arizona game, you don't hear from him. After losses, you do, you know. And same thing, Rice supporters, after big games, you hear from him. After losses, you really don't. Like, that's just the nature of commenting. Sure. And sure, you know, immediate reaction stuff. So that's your uplifting Rebel Room this week, as we pick apart everything that there is to pick apart and project some possible no-shows in the future. We will see. I would like to see consistent. I mean, I guess just consistencies, period. I mean, they flip-flop so much, just one game to the next, and, you know, getting up for this one and not for that one. And I don't care that you got up for San Diego State. That doesn't mean anything, because that's easy to do. Same way, I don't care that you beat San Jose State, because that's easy to do. So show up this week. You know, actually give some good performances. If you play hard, play decently well in these next two games, you're going to win them. And so then you're 3-4. And so at least you have – you're putting yourself more in the right direction, as you got you know, and the next road game, an important one at Reno, trying to snap a 3-game losing streak in state.
It's just Reno.
Yeah, it's just the team that's beat UNLV 3 straight times.
And they'll be up for the game.
Yes. Both teams ought to be. Better be. Need to be. But we will see how UNLV develops from that. For Ray, I am Taylor. This is the Rebel Room. We'll talk to you guys next week. And I'm drinking, well, you know that you're my